The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum, and we have a full agenda for today. So let's start out with Representative Smith. Would you please move the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Smith has moved the minutes of March 18th. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Smith. We'll get right into the agenda here. The first bill is House File 363. Jacob Bill, if you could join us, please, sir. And it'd be our intent to, I believe the chair of the Legacy Committee has requested that it go over to Legacy Committee. Okay, so I will move for Representative Jacob, House File 363. There is an amendment. Is that your amendment, Representative Jacob, to get the bill in the order you'd like?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll move the H0363A1 amendment. Any discussion? Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we want to let him describe it or if you want to. Or wait, this is the one that goes to the Clean Water Fund, right?
Yeah, this one, yes, it does.
Yeah, so, I mean, this amendment changes the source of the funding for this from the general fund to the Clean Water Fund. And I guess I'm just curious why, and I don't know if you know whether this is a way that we fund any other property tax credits or any other tax work out of this fund. And if you don't know, then we can certainly ask our staff. But what's the rationale behind doing this, please?
Representative Jacob, why are you doing this?
Thank you for the question. So I was recently appointed to the Clean Water Council, and I've sat in on a couple of those meetings, and I've seen the amount of funds there and what they do with those funds. This seems like a good fit for this bill, so I decided to.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, do you know if are there other tax items that are funded out of the Clean Water Fund or any other sort of dedicated environmental fund?
Representative Jacob.
I haven't looked into that.
Okay,
maybe,
thank you.
Maybe staff could help us on that, or.
Mr. Chair and members, currently there are no property tax credits funded through the Clean Water Fund.
Thank you. I think we should set a precedent here.
Yes.
Chair Gomez. Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Jacob. I guess my understanding is that the Clean Water Fund, you fund a lot of different projects out of there. It's not like it's undersubscribed. It's not like there's a bunch of money sitting there, unless I could be mistaken about that. The Clean Water Fund is funded out of Legacy, so it's constitutionally dedicated funding. And I guess we do set precedent, obviously, in tax committee for things like this. And, you know, I have some concerns about this sort of unorthodox and unprecedented manner of funding a tax credit. So just wanted to register that.
And thank you very much, Chair Gomez. I'll move that H0363A1 amendment be adopted. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I did that one myself. Or there's quite a bit of opposition, wasn't there? Over there, so. Okay. And that's fine. That's fine. We can have opposition here. Okay, so now we have the bill as amended before us, and members, the motion I'll make is that House File 363, as amended, be sent to the Legacy Committee. So to your bill, sir.
Thank you, Chair Davids, Chair Gomez, members of the committee. So House File 363, also known as the Ag Water Quality Certification Bill, is a bipartisan bill that ties a $5 per acre tax credit to any acres in the outlined 8-county area in southeast Minnesota that are enrolled in the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. The bill is a response to a petition filed to the EPA in 2023 with concerns about nitrate levels in wells in that area that exceed safe drinking water standards. Today I have Brad Redlin and Hannah Bernhardt with me, and I'd like to have them speak to what the program is and why we need it. So,
please identify yourself for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Brad Jodahl-Redland. I'm the manager of the Agriculture Conservation Services section at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, where the Water Quality Certification Program is operated out of. Let me just quickly note at the outset that the proposed legislation and funding is not within the governor's budget, so as a department, we are not here as an endorsement of the bill, but we are here to recognize the incentive intent to expand participation in the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. And the tax credit mechanism is something that has been presented to us previously from public input and from our own state advisory committee on a few occasions. So the topic at hand for me then primarily is just to quickly describe what the Water Quality Certification Program in Minnesota is. It's really unique to our state. We're the only state that has this program, which through a risk assessment process certifies farms throughout the state of Minnesota. We have some more than 1,600 farms certified. The risk assessment process for those farms is that they are reviewed, all parcels, all crops grown, all types of management on every farm is risk assessed for what might be posed as a challenge to water quality. And then through that risk assessment, through our professional accredited and licensed agronomists and conservation planners, they develop with the grower taking lead what practices they would implement or management changes they will implement to mitigate that identified risk. And once all those risks are mitigated on that farm, we are very proud to convey on them the water quality certification that provides that recognition for a 10-year term and under a contract with the state of Minnesota. Again, this is whole farm conservation planning and delivery that doesn't exist anywhere else in our country at the federal or state level. Minnesota is unique in having this level of intervention and this level of practice implementation and farm management assistance, the service that we provide to growers through the Water Quality Certification Program. We also certainly in delivering this program through risk assessment and mitigation of the known sites and concerns for water quality impairment. We obviously then have the full tracking and recording of all management and implementation changes. We record the actual outcomes of those practices that are implemented. You may be familiar with the work of our soil and water conservation districts, the Federal Natural Resource Conservation Service, the practices that they implement on farms. We are all doing the same practices. There are practice standards for implementing different things, be it cover crops, be it a grass waterway, be it any number of practices, and certification responsible for hundreds of separately different practices, totaling over 7,000 practice interventions on farms through our work so far, that we can absolutely produce the outcomes, the soil saved, the phosphorus saved, exactly the same as the soil and water conservation districts or USDA can. We are obviously all just doing those same things. There's certainly nothing different or unique or hidden about the Water Quality Certification Program. We do the same practices with the same outcomes. I guess I don't need to go on too long, Representative Chair, but that's my initial overview, but I'm absolutely happy to have further discussion about the work that we do at the department and our great field staff out there are working with farmers as I sit here today on certifying their farms. Thank you.
That's your story and you're sticking to it. Could I get your name again, sir? I didn't catch your name.
Yeah, it's Brad. My last name's actually two words, so it confuses everybody, but I'll answer anything. His last name is Jodahl-Redland.
R-E-D-L-I-N?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, questions for the first witness here from members. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Redland. Okay, so you run this whole program. We have SWCDs. We have the USDA making interventions. I don't know a lot about this issue, but I just read the newspaper like everybody else and was just really alarmed about the findings by the EPA when they came to visit, and it stuck out to me because during that same period, the EPA also did some enforcement in South Minneapolis, where I represent, that you know was about, like, you know, protecting human health and these things. And so I guess I wonder if you can give me a sense of the scale of the state investment in these kind of efforts that you're describing.
Mr. Jordahl Redlin.
Chair, Representative, thank you. Happy to just co-chair, I guess. I guess I'm going to have to limit myself to speaking about the programs that we operate, or this program in particular. I cannot speak to the total investment on all ag conservation services of the entire state of Minnesota.
Right.
Board of Montessori Resources obviously has and receives through the Clean Water Fund and other sources the most money. MDA receives a lesser amount. But with that money at the Water Quality Certification Program, we receive $3.5 million a year. And that investment then, again, is an initial investment at the time of certification that then applies over a 10-year period. And tracking those dollars, which I guess I'll wade right into it, but I guess I'll preface my remarks by saying you all probably know more about ag policy than I know about tax policy, but I'm going to go into ag policy a bit right here. The program that we fund, we have certified over, nearly 1,200,000 acres. On an acre basis of that funding analysis, we're about $25 an acre. And that's probably, it varies on other investments. You asked about other conservation investments. Two points to be made on that. The certification program is a service provided to the growers through our local certifier that really acts as their personal consultant. And they say, as I noted, it's a risk assessment process. They said, we've identified a particular risk, and there are options to address that risk. The Soil and Water Conservation District might have that option. The NRCS might have that option. So our certifier then helps and guides that grower through the process of getting that financial assistance that exists anywhere. So the crux of our program is we assess for risks, we find risks, then we work with the grower and all available options to mitigate that risk so that the water is protected and that any impairments are now prevented.
Mr. Chair?
Chair Gomez?
Oh, just so what is the base budget for the program is what I was really asking.
Okay.
If I maybe didn't say it right, I apologize.
Mr. Jordahl Redlin?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's the $3.5
million
annually.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So,
Chair Gomez?
Yeah. So I understand that this bill was heard informationally in the Ag Committee, like it's in our possession, but you guys had an informational hearing. Is that right, Representative Jordan?
Representative Jacob?
Okay.
Yes.
Great, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So, because I watched a little bit of it, and there was a very interesting question that was asked of you, Mr. Redlin, Mr. Jordahl Redlin, by the chair, and so I'm just going to ask you exactly the same question that he asked you. Is there any evidence in any state anywhere that $5 per acre has or is going to improve water quality?
Mr. Jordahl Redlin.
Thank you, Chair. Is that chair and co-chair? Is that correct?
She's a chair, too. I'm a chair.
Chair.
Mr. Chair.
We're both chairs.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Gomez.
I was asking as a question to you. So is that yes or no?
Mr. Jordahl Redlin.
The answer that I gave to that question is, has a $5 tax credit in any state anywhere ever cleaned the water? And no, of course it hasn't. A $5 tax credit is not an environmental action, and no other state in the union has the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. So absolutely the answer to that question, as I gave to Chair Hansen, is no, of course not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, let's go on. Any other questions for Representative Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Jordahl Redlin. It was Sovereignty Day on that day in Ag, so I wasn't able to ask this question there. So I want to ask this question here. Specifically, so this credit is supposed to incentivize, I assume, people to, if they haven't already had their land certified in the Water Quality Certification Program. In the eight counties that are named in this bill, can you give us some idea of how much land is certified? And does the department have any idea what land isn't certified that might be certified if this incentive were to work?
Mr. Jordahl Redland.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. I apologize, but we do have the database. I can have those numbers generated very easily for you in terms of how much they're certified. We could also, I guess, through USDA Ag Census and other means, determine how many agricultural production acres are in that those eight counties and provide that information as well. Is that what you had in mind?
Representative Smith?
It looks like Rep. Jacob might want to.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you. 220,000 acres is what's certified in the eight county area currently. And what could be certified? The remainder of the acres.
So. Representative Smith?
Do you happen to know, like, what percentage is 220,000 acres to the current eight? I don't know off the top of my head. Do you have any idea? Is that a high percentage of the land? That's what I'm asking. Or is there a lot that still needs to be certified?
Rep. Jacob? We might need to get back.
You can get back to me with that. That's
yeah, 220,000 is a fraction. And it would depend on whether you're talking about all land, DNR land,
tillable land,
farmers land, tillable land.
Representative Jacob, what you're talking about is tillable land.
Yes.
Isn't
it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Representative Smith?
Yeah, and of course, that's my question. We can talk off-line on that.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Jordahl Redland? Okay, let's go to the next witness. I believe we have Hunter Peterson, or do we want to go to Lori Cox? Or we got Lori there?
We've got Hannah here right now.
Oh, Hannah. Well, let's go Hannah, since you're there. Hannah Bernhardt, Minnesota Farmers Union. Please present your testimony. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Davids and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hannah Bernhardt, and on behalf of myself and Minnesota Farmers Union, I'm glad to share support for Representative Jacob's bill to pilot a $5 per acre tax credit for acres enrolled in the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. I'd originally planned to join you to testify on Representative Nelson's bill up later in the agenda, but wanted to take the opportunity to voice support for this proposal as well from the perspective of a farmer who participates in this program. I'll share just a couple points about why I think this would be an exciting addition to the program. First, as Brad has mentioned, the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program is a nation-leading program that enrolled 1 million acres in 2023, and I'm proud of our state for taking the lead on conservation on this issue. In my mind, what's made it effective is that it employs boots-on-the-ground technical service providers to come walk your farm with you, identify risks to water quality, and make a plan to address those risks. And even more importantly, they take a holistic view of your farm. They're working with you to take into account your unique geography and practices and making sure you're doing all you can to promote water quality. It's really rare as a farmer to have that kind of personalized attention from someone who's not just trying to sell you something. In my case, we identified two drainage ditches that both my equipment and my cattle were regularly trudging through to access pasture. And so they helped me install three culverts and gravel ditch crossings. It took time, money, and engineering skills that I frankly didn't have to make those happen, and I honestly never would have prioritized that work without their eyes on my farm and the cost share assistance available to me through certification. So my second point is that I think it's really important people know that with this technical assistance, there is rigor and accountability. If I didn't implement the required changes, I wouldn't get certified. And that's part of what made me so proud to display my Ag Water Quality Certified Farm sign prominently in my driveway. And the additional endorsements for things like soil health and wildlife have kept me striving to continue improving my farm's impact on the environment. I personally really wanted the wildlife endorsement sign as well, but it's taken some considerable extra work to get it. Third and finally, this program is proposed to be piloted in southeast Minnesota, where it can help farmers continue to improve their practices and protect groundwater where there's a significant geological need. This is because the Department of Agriculture has shared that certified farms show a significant reduction in nitrate loss through the adoption of conservation practices. As farmers, we're always trying to improve, but farming margins are thin. So incentives like this tax credit are needed to help farmers invest in something they currently can't justify in their bottom line. And while I don't live in the southeast part of the state, so I would not be receiving a tax credit as it's written, I'm glad to see us pilot an initiative to help encourage more farms to participate in the program and demonstrate its efficacy to the rest of the state. And I would hope that eventually the tax credit could be available to everyone. So thank you for the opportunity to share my perspective as a water quality certified farm, and I hope this proposal earns your support.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Bernhardt?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Let's go to Lori Cox. And then why don't we get Hunter Peterson up there, too, so we'll have our final two. Is there anyone else wish to testify for this bill or with concerns from the audience? Okay, very good. State your name for the record, please, and present your testimony.
Thank you, and good morning, chairs and members. My name is Lori Cox. I live at Roots Return Heritage Farm in Carver County. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity today to testify in opposition to Representative Jacobs' House File 363. The bill was heard in the House Ag Committee Monday as information only, as was discussed here. And when Representative Hansen asked Program Manager Brad, are there tax reductions in other states providing that water quality, Brad had answered no. My farm was certified in 2016, and I joined the advisory board afterwards. I rent my land and fruit crops to new and beginning food farmers. I utilize continual cover crops on highly erodible soils near the Minnesota River Wildlife Refuge. I live in a vulnerable groundwater area. I only till ground when planting annuals, otherwise I no-till my cover crop seeds. No synthetic nitrogen, no pesticide class chemicals, and drip irrigation is used for water efficiency. I just outlined several practices that actually provide air, soil, and water quality. The taxes I pay on two ag parcels enjoy the lowest tax burden in our state, along with the additional tax deferment programs. I myself am enrolled in Green Acres and also homestead both non-contiguous parcels to fall under that homestead reduction. Representative Jacobsville proposing this tax credit is misguided. Proposing a tax credit will not provide clean water outcomes, nor has the years of this program's existence. Not one state agency claims that this program provides water quality improvements from ag pollution impairments, and in fact, ag shows up increasingly in impaired surface waters and groundwater, which MDA itself reports. I served 6 years on this advisory program board, but was the only member not renewed for service this fall. Everyone should know that there are no actual measurements this program has to claim improved water quality outcomes. If you place a rubber membrane underneath and walls around an ag parcel emitting pollution, you will improve water quality. But since that's not realistic, anyone should be able to state with ease how practice A will provide assurance for water quality outcome B. Modeling doesn't explain outcomes achieved, but measurements do. Ag organizations that are supporting this see another offer of taxpayer subsidy with no testing or end results attached. Sounds more like a fleecing for Minnesota taxpayers. Perennial use of synthetic nitrogen, oversupply of manure, neonic-coated seeds, chemical sprays, tillage, drain tile, does not assure water quality. All practices are producer choices and are allowed under these certified acres. EPA stepped in last year when our state agencies didn't for high nitrogen in private wells, even where Representative Jacobs' district lies. Per the last ag census, the majority of acres in Minnesota still do not implement conservation practices. MPCA, which is home to Clean Water Council, states that if all BMPs, best management practices, were followed on all ag acres, we still wouldn't have clean water. When I asked MDA to review with our advisory board ag pollution and water quality reports provided by them, MPCA, DNR, MDH to help guide the program's efforts where it's most needed, my request was met with some anger and refusal to review the very data needed to make these program and quantified decisions to say where this program would be most effective. Because of no measuring infield, edge of field, drain tile discharge, hard data of this program's efficacy is missing. No well testing, no surface or groundwater testing, no soil tests. In 2023, when myself and others proposed improvements to Brad and Commissioner Peterson, which included testing and governance requirements, along with increased funding, they just said thanks. My midpoint letter of compliance for this program just came in the mail and no one visited my farm. The program claims to remove ag pollution risks to water quality. They're unsubstantiated. NRCS here in Minnesota says where these recommended practices originate, they state it is next to impossible to make any guarantees to specific water quality outcomes due to a multitude of factors, even on my own farm, I understand. Soil type, depth to bedrock, weather, floods, droughts, climate projections, producer education, producer familiarity with the practice, equipment, drainage, irrigation, consistency of practice, etc. The very program's existence relies on clean water funds, which has already cost taxpayers over $54 million to date. But where is the ROI? Taxpayers also currently pay to clean up and mitigate ag pollution issues through no fault of their own. Clean Water Fund recipients are to follow statute mandates in Chapter 144D.50, Subdivision 4, Expenditures and Accountability, Subpart A reads, a project receiving funding from the Clean Water Fund shall include measurable outcomes as defined in Section 3.303, Subdivision 10, a plan for measuring and evaluating the results, and an assessment of whether the funding celebrates cultural diversity or reaches diverse communities in Minnesota, including reaching low and moderate income households. Your opposition to this bill will help keep conversation honest that degraded water quality from ag sources needs more help than just this program existing. I thank you so much and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Ms. Cox. Any questions for the witness, for the testifier? Thank you very much. We'll now go to a Hunter Peterson, Minnesota Farm Bureau. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Hunter Peterson. I serve as the public policy specialist at Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. On behalf of our 31,000 family, farm, and ranch members, appreciate the opportunity to share our support for House File 363. Our organization supports tax incentives for farmers that enroll in the Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program. Minnesota's Ag Water Quality Cert Program has been a successful voluntary initiative that recognizes and rewards farmers for implementing conservation practices that protect our state's water resources. Since its inception, this program has provided a pathway for farmers to demonstrate their commitment to environmental stewardship while maintaining a productive and profitable operation. With ongoing dialogue about water quality in Southeast Minnesota, we understand and appreciate the rationale for targeting this credit towards the Karst region. The proposed tax credit is a logical next step, encouraging greater participation in this program. And while farmers are certainly committed to conservation, the expenses associated with adopting certain conservation practices are often too big of a barrier for farmers to overcome on their own. To that end, this credit would help farmers who wish to further adopt conservation practices or become ag water quality certified achieve those goals. This initiative is a practical approach to supporting agriculture and environmental stewardship simultaneously, and it recognizes the voluntary efforts of farmers while reinforcing our state's commitment to protecting our soil and water. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to express our support for House File 363.
Any questions for Hunter Peterson from members? Okay, I'd like to go back just a little bit to Hannah Bernhardt. Is she still here? Oh, you can see right there. My question is this. It says, I just want to get this right, Medicine Creek Farm, Minnesota Farmers Union. Were you testifying on behalf of the Farmers Union, or are you a Farmers Union member like I am? Oh, both. Oh, cool. I've learned over the years, if you have the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union on the same page, you just might want to get out of the way, just a thought. That's what I do. I'll just speak for myself. Not that members have to do anything like that. So anyone else from the audience wish to testify? Questions from members for the author, Representative Jacob? Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I appreciated that testimony from Ms. Cox. And she surfaced a lot of issues, I think, in her testimony that really deserve a response. What we do as policymakers is we like identify an issue we're trying to address and then make interventions to address that issue. I think, what we learned from the EPA's visit last year is that whatever interventions it is that we're making have not helped us address this really profound and large issue. And so what is the return on investment? What, you know, what's the answer kind of to those questions and those issues that Ms. Cox surfaced?
Oh, thank you for the question. So at the end of the day, all we can do is all we can do. This program, Ag Water Quality Certification Program, implements every best management program that the government is aware of and certifies that the farmers are implementing them. So coincidentally, when the petition was brought to the EPA about the high nitrates in southeast Minnesota, I tried to think of, well, how could we solve the issue? So I went to Tom Peterson, and I know he has not, MDA is not endorsing this particular bill, but I said, what about this Ag Water Quality Certification Program? It implements everything we need to do to protect the water. And he said, well, let me send you over some language on a bill. So they, MDA had already been on this page and had already been down this road. So I'm simply really just bringing forward a solution that the Department of Ag had previously thought of. And to your statement, Representative Chair Gomez, that there's no proof that $5 per acre will solve the problem. I don't think there's any proof that $5 an acre would not help either. It's an incentive to implement every best management practice that we're aware of. And if you stand against that, I think you stand against clean water.
Chair Gomez?
So I guess I'm interested in, like, what is the actual evidence or the theory of the case that an additional, you know, incentive around property taxes, and of course, you know, I mean, there's an argument for this, and obviously there's a reason, I suppose a policy reason that people, that this is the case, but I mean, agricultural homestead land, as you know, is the lowest, you know, property tax classification rate, or one of them. I guess 4D is lower now. Homestead for blind or disabled people. But, you know, farms have some of the most generous kind of property tax treatment in the state. And I'm just like, what's the actual evidence that, like, an extra $5 an acre would improve water quality and not just be, you know, a way to give public money, you know, to people who are already doing something or to, you know, landowners that already receive really favorable treatment in the property tax system?
May I respond? Well, first of all, I think you're 180 off on ag land being the most generously not taxed. If you compare it to the amount of services that it demands, agricultural land demands almost no services. It doesn't require water, sewer, emergency services, anything. Yet it continues to pay into the property tax system. So I would say that your statement is not the way I see it. And why would it make sense? So conversely to doing the best thing we can, being good stewards of the property, if we just went out there and did the opposite and started applying chemicals unrestricted and just went the other direction, of course that would have a negative effect on the environment. So promoting doing everything we can to protect the environment is certainly a step in the right direction. So it's a good bill, it's a good solution, and I would just reiterate, if you're against the bill, you're against clean water.
Chair Gomez?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I mean, I suppose that's one way to go, to say that if you oppose this particular intervention, you're against clean water. But the fact of the matter is that we have thrown literally billions of dollars, of public dollars, at this issue. And there need to be demonstrable results when you're expecting additional public dollars to be thrown at an issue. There needs to be an actual connection, right? If you want billions of dollars to be thrown at an issue, then you don't, then, and like we have outcomes that are just unacceptable. It's like the idea that we would come and say, oh, you know what, is the clincher here? Let's just throw more money, throw more public dollars at this issue. So I guess I just, you know, certainly you're welcome to, you know, speak to people's motives all that you want. I mean, it's not the custom of this body to do that, but you're certainly welcome to come in front of this committee and do that. But, you know, when I speak about the classification rate being one of the lowest, you know, I cited the other two that are lower in the state. That's not an opinion. It's in black and white. And so, you know, certainly you're welcome to have your opinion about that. But I'm actually speaking to a number that's in statute. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I'm out of line here, just let me know. But since we have dual chairs and there's comments and stuff made, is it a right to ask the chair a question or the other chair?
You can ask any question anyone you'd like.
Okay, thank you. So my question, and I'm listening to what you're saying, Chair Gomez, would you, I'm trying to wrap my head around it, would you suggest getting rid of the program altogether?
Chair Gomez.
Thank you. I'm not on the Agriculture Committee. I'm not on the Legacy Committee. I'm not suggesting that. I'm not sure where that comes from, but I'm saying that when the people spend money on, this is the same thing we're talking about across the government enterprise. When the people spend money on something and it's supposed to do something, then we should be able to present evidence that it's doing the thing. When we come and say, hey, we want to spend money to do something, we want to spend more money to do this something that we haven't proven that the money that we're already spending on does, like, we just need to ask questions. That's all I'm saying.
Representative Weiner.
No, and I understand that. And I guess the point is if we follow the natural progression, if the idea is that it's not serving a purpose, then are you suggesting that maybe we should cut the program? I guess is what the... I'm trying to understand...
Mr. Chair.
Your
Chair Gomez.
I'm not suggesting anything of the sort. I'm saying that we have somebody here who has been really, from what I understood from that testimony, really involved actually in sort of the process and in the oversight of this program, and just surfaced questions that, you know, I mean, we have a, you know, we're the tax committee, but if we are being asked to spend additional dollars, I'll just say that, you know, some issues were surfaced that to my thinking haven't really been addressed. So the answer to your question is no. I'm not suggesting that we, you know, undo any program that is held, that's happening in Legacy, that's happening out of the Clean Water Fund. What I am suggesting is that as with the other investments that we make out of the state budget, that we be able to demonstrate that they do the things we say they're going to do. That's what I'm suggesting.
Representative Weiner?
No, and actually, thank you, Mr. Chair, Chairs. And if we have programs that aren't successful, I really think we should be looking at them. If they're not working, if they're not doing what they're supposed to, and if that was the route you're going down, I would actually be in favor of discussing it more. Because this program, if I recall correctly, was set up by Mark Dayton, and Vilsack was the head of AIG at that time, I think. And if it has not met the criteria, and that's kind of where I was trying to figure out where you're going with this, if it has not done what it's supposed to do, should it be looked at and should it be cut? So that's kind of the premise. I was not trying to be accusatory by any means, just trying to follow your thought process. But, and I do think there is times when we have had programs that are not effective, and could the money be used elsewhere better? I think those are discussions that should take place. So
nobody's ever tried to follow my thought process. Representative Weiner, I don't know. Okay. We're going to wrap it up here, and we're going to take a vote on. Oh, let's go real quick then. Chair Joachim, and then Smith, then we're going to go to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be quick. And I just want to, I'm sorry that I came in late. I did read all this stuff last night. And actually, I was here when Dayton did put some of these programs into place. And I remember that because I was sitting at one of my first State of the States with. And he announced the program about clean water, and only one side of the aisle stood up. and my husband was like, who wouldn't clap for clean water? But I know the farmers do care about that, and I know you guys are all in a tough position right now with some of the cuts from the federal government coming down, and you have always been good stewards of the land because you need things, you need it to grow things, but it gets complicated as we keep layering on different programs more and more to figure out how to make this work. And Chair Gomez is right. We have to make sure that we're actually seeing results. As the Education Finance Chair, I want to also thank the Tax Committee for doing the Ag to School credit. It's $80 million a year so that you don't have to pay for the bonding on your whole property, just your house, an acre, and the garage. So there is a lot of stuff that we do for property tax is when it comes to our agricultural land. But I hope we could be in this together about clean water, and it's hard sometimes when something's so important and you think you're all on the same page and then you have to incentivize folks to do the right thing. Now, if it's about just making sure that you can hang on right now with these strange times we're having, we could have that discussion, but I just wanted to throw that out there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith, and then we'll go to the department, and then we're going to take a vote on this. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Jacob. I appreciate where you're coming from. Obviously, this is our area of the state. This is where we drink the water. Our families drink the water. So we care very deeply about this, and I do take you at your word here. I don't think this is necessarily the bill to do that. I think we're conflating a couple of things. We're conflating the program itself, which is good, as you mentioned, and I think the department does a good job, and this bill, which is a property taxed incentive that, in my opinion, is overly broad, to land that is very taxed at a very low rate already compared to apartments or other residential dwellings to try to get people to enter this program. And you yourself are the chief author on other bills that I think does this better, is towards this goal better. House File 821, which is MDA's funding to help with private wells, nitrate reduction, reverse osmosis, those sort of things. House File 452, which is the bill to give from the Clean Water Fund grants to be subgranted out to other counties through Olmsted County's Soil and Water Conservation Districts, which I think is a great bill as well. And if we fund things like this, those other bills have less funding, even specifically from the same fund, the Clean Water Fund. So I appreciate the intent behind this bill, but I don't think this is quite the way to achieve that. So thank you for coming before the committee, but I am a no on this.
Okay, thank you. I guess we have one more, if it could be quick, Representative Schwartz. And then we're going to the department, and then we're voting. Unless somebody else wants to.
Just a quick statement. Thank you for bringing this bill to hearing today. I support this bill. This bill investing in water quality reduces long-term costs associated with pollution, drinking, and water treatment and environmental damage. The state already supports similar programs that aligns with Minnesota environmental goals. So I think this bill will be great for greater Minnesota. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Would the department like to make comments? Okay, let's go to the author, wrap it up.
Yeah, I would like to have Mr. Red.
Very quickly. We spent an hour on this thing already, and we got four more bills. So, yeah.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm sorry to make this go any longer, but just a couple points is that the reporting side for clean water funding is obviously something we do entirely every time. It's the Board of Water and Soil Resources that has those outcome assessment requirements and water quality, clean water funded programs, and every practice we implement, we report equally as much as any other agency or any other implementation that's ever occurred in the state. In fact, we have more data than anyone else does because we have the 10-year commitment and the GIS maps and tracking of all those outcomes. For instance, we report this on a weekly basis. 169,860 tons of soil saved per year. Sediment was reduced 57,000 tons per year. We have a 45% reduction in nitrogen loss. We've had 73,323 pounds of phosphorus prevented every year, and now we are in our 12th year. So those numbers, you start multiplying by powers of by 10. So to give you some idea of the outcomes we're achieving, and we're achieving that on about $25 an acre when a similar program at the federal level, like maybe Conservation Reserve Program, that's approaches $200 an acre. So we're doing it at a lower cost than any other intervention that exists in our country right now.
Okay, thank you very much. Wrap it up, if you would, please, Representative Jacob.
The bill is just simply a very genuine attempt to put every best management practice on the ground to solve the nitrate issue that's been brought forward by the petition to the EPA. So I'd appreciate your support. It's a very good bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jacobs. So I'll renew my motion that House File 363 as amended be recommended to pass to the Legacy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you to Representative Jacob and all the witnesses and the good discussion. I will now move House File 969, and for the record, proper treats were brought by the author because it's his first time before the Tax Committee. He could have gotten out of it, though, because the rule is you have to be a freshman. So, but we'll take them. Pass them around. So thank you very much, Representative Nelson. Get those around. The other side, macadamia nut. And then M&M, Jacob, M&M. Welcome to the committee, sir. I will move House File 969 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Two-year bill, sir. Are there witnesses? Let's get Mr. Clavin up there and Hannah Bernhardt up there by the author, if we could. Two-year bill, sir.
All right. Thank you, Chair Davids. And this bill, it would remove fencing materials it would make them exempt from sales tax. Right now, there's a fair amount of things in agriculture that we have that are tax exempt, and this would just remove it from all materials or all fencing materials. So,
pretty straightforward. Let's go with Mr. Clavin. State your name, who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bruce Clavin. I represent the Minnesota State Cattlemen Association. This bill, they support the bill and simply wanted to go on record. I would tell members we've had this bill around over the years. In fact, this may date back to your ag chairman days, Mr. Chairman. It could go back that far, but it's never made across the finish line. I would point members to line 1.10 and 1.11. There is precedent for exempting fencing here for farm survey, and you'll see that in the bill. So cattlemen simply support the bill. One ad lib point, since the treats went around, I would make the plug that steak on a stick will be held on April 24th on the front lawn of the Capitol.
Steak April 24th?
Yes, sir. April okay. 24th.
Write that down, folks. That's a good one. Okay, let's go to Hannah Bernhardt. Please state your name, who represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair Davids and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hannah Bernhardt, and I run a diversified livestock farm in Finlayson, not too far from Representative Nelson. From my own experience and on behalf of the Minnesota Farmers Union, I'm honored to share my strong support for exempting farm fencing from sales tax. Together with my husband, Jason, and our son, Harvey, we raise and market grass-fed beef, lamb, and pork. So being grass-based livestock farmers, we buy a lot of fencing. And given that we operate on slim profit margins, this tax relief would be meaningful to our farm. In particular, I'll describe a couple reasons why this is important to me and why I'd value your support. First, this change would be a big deal for many livestock farmers, but in particular, those who are just starting out. When we bought our farm, the only land I could afford as a beginner had zero infrastructure, no shelter, no water, and no fencing. In that first year of building our farm, I was actually shocked to realize that the one tool I needed the most to raise livestock was not tax exempt. This bill would have made a big difference to getting my farm started. And this is also true for a lot of young farmers transitioning back into family operations. Often the entry point for the next generation is reintroducing livestock onto the farm, but most existing fences have been torn out over the years. Second, I work hard to foster soil health and promote water quality through rotationally grazing our livestock, a practice sometimes called management-intensive prescribed grazing. As it sounds, these practices provide environmental benefits, but they also require a lot more management and a lot more fencing. I don't just have one permanent fence around the outside of my pasture. I use spools of temporary polywire fencing, step-in posts, and rolls of electrified sheep netting, and I move these around my farm daily. I could talk at length about the amazing things that happen in the soil with this practice, the symbiotic relationship between ruminants and the microbes in the soil, and how my water-holding capacity has increased and made me resilient to drought. But I will keep it brief and just say that fencing is the one and only tool that is required to make this practice work. And I'll also invite you all to come visit my farm. Each Saturday in the summer, I give public tours where you can watch me move my animals, and I explain the soil health principles more in depth. We're proud to be Ag Water Quality Certified by the Department of Agriculture, and we're glad that there are programs in the state to support people who want to graze livestock.
I'm also part of a number of other organizations engaged in conservation agriculture, and I'm friends with countless other farmers where these kinds of practices are used and fencing is our primary tool. And more farmers are interested in learning to use regenerative agriculture principles to improve their soil health. So I know that tax relief for fencing equipment would be widely celebrated and would truly help more producers incorporate livestock back into the farm. So in closing, this is really a way to just help livestock farmers, in particular those getting started, and help farmers implement soil health practices like rotational grazing. I appreciate your consideration of this proposal, and I thank Representative Nelson for your work. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Clavin or Ms. Bernhardt? Is there anyone else from the audience which testify for the bill or with concerns? Would the department like to testify on this one? Okay. Okay, member questions for the author. Okay, I will make my motion here that House File 969. Oh, please wrap it up, Representative Nelson.
Thank you for hearing this bill. I'm hoping you're able to enjoy the cookies and the Jolly Ranchers. I thought Jolly Ranchers is a great touch, you know, with the fencing provision.
That's creative.
But thank you for hearing this, and I think it is something that you know, can be very important on, you know, bringing livestock back into the farm. You know, I've visited Ms. Bernhardt's farm, and it's a great opportunity. And you know, she's started off from a bare piece of land and really turned it into something quite remarkable. And I would encourage taking a tour of it. And seeing the great work she's doing for conservation and, you know, and what we can do. And I think this is just a way to help, you know, and it's also turning, you know, profit back into the community. It's not just her farm. You know, she's investing back into our community, buying most of this fencing local and doing a great job right in the community. So thank you for your support.
And thank you, and I'm going to go a little bit out of order. I did not see that Chair Gomez had some comments. So, Chair Gomez?
Yeah, sorry. Sorry if I raised my hand late. I didn't mean to speak before the author. So just a couple things on this. I mean, you know, the base for the tax exemption on farming equipment is 130-ish, a little under 130 million per biennium. This would add, you know, 17 to 20 million a biennium. It's pretty expensive given the budget that we're looking at. And, you know, the thing about sales tax exemptions in general is that they are by their nature untargeted. So this is not just for small farms, not just for those starting out. Cause I mean, it sounds like you have a really amazing operation, with your livestock farm that has, you know, a lot of thought put into it and a lot of co-benefits for the community and for, you know, the, land and the waters in your area. But you know, when we do sales tax exemptions, that it's like it's for everybody. So it's for a farm of any size, it's for a farm of any tenure, it's for a farm that brings in any amount of revenue. And so, you know, I guess I just would just a sort of general thing is like in tight economic times, if you really are trying to assist, you know, farmers early in their career, small farmers, farmers that are not bringing in millions of dollars a year, there's a way to do that through a direct appropriation approach through the Department of Agriculture rather than a general and very expensive, you know, tax exemption. But that's just a general comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Any closing comments from the author?
I thank you for your consideration and enjoy the treats.
Thank you. And with that, I will move that House File 969 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Nelson. We're going to mix it up here just a little bit since Davids and Harder are on the committee and we're going to be here. Let's go to Chairman Anderson, House File 2316, members. So if you go to the back of the pile here, you've got House File 2316. Welcome to the Tax Committee, sir. And if you could please, are there any witnesses on this? I don't see any. Anybody in the audience wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Okay, two-year bill. I will move House File 2316.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Gomez. Appreciate being able to have this bill heard. What this bill does, it expands the ability for a farmer to continue to be able to utilize the Ag Homestead. It makes a couple of changes in how the Ag Homestead can be maintained. And where I see this as being a benefit would be if a farmer is retiring and we want to make sure that that land can be passed on to, in this case, a relative or a young farmer trying to start out as well. Getting into farming is difficult, as you all know. It's an extremely highly capital-intensive business. And the changes that this bill makes, Mr. Chair, it would allow either the owner or the new person who is going to be running the land to be able to continue farming it and to maintain that Ag Homestead. It also allows the retiring farmer the ability to, a lot of times when a farmer retires, they may have some health issues, for example, and they want to move to a larger city in the area that has great medical care. That's a big concern when folks retire. And this would allow the farmer who's retiring to move to a city in his county, not necessarily the four township rule, and also the county adjacent to that county to live there and still maintain that Ag Homestead. So if staff could explain the bill any further, Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate that. I don't have any witnesses because this bill pretty much cost neutral, doesn't cost a lot, a little bit of shifting in the homestead application, but that's what the bill does, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Cope, any other thoughts on the bill? Did a pretty good job explaining it. I guess anything else you need to add?
Nothing comes to mind, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the author? Chair Joachim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just maybe nonpartisan staff. I was trying to figure out, I can totally understand my parents just downsized because they couldn't handle their house anymore. But what if instead of going into assisted living or renting, they bought another smaller home, they downsized, would they have two homestead properties then?
Mr. Cope?
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, yes, I believe you could claim the homestead on two properties. One was a special agricultural homestead. I'd need to follow up with you, or I will follow up you if that's not correct.
Chair Joachim?
One just quick follow-up question. When you're looking at that, can you let me know, too, if there's any other area where we allow people to have two homesteaded properties? That'd be helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Cole?
I'll do that,
okay,
Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, to my understanding, a person is allowed to have only one homestead. So I would, again, with checking with staff, it's my understanding that you couldn't maintain a second homestead if you moved off the farm and still keep this homestead. But staff can check on that. But to my understanding, you can only have one homestead.
Mr. Cole?
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Anderson's comment, you cannot claim two agricultural homesteads. I don't know whether a homestead on a residential property is compatible with special agricultural homestead, and I will check on that.
And Mr. Cope, if you get that's a very good question. If you get that to members, that'd be helpful. Any other questions for the author, Representative Lee?
Thank you, Chair. I know we shuffled the bill orders around a little bit. I know Rep. Harder has a similar bill to expand, to give the possibility of passing on farmland to more family members. So I guess I'm just curious, you know, these two bills kind of are trying to solve for an issue of, I'm assuming, you know, keeping farms within the family so that, like, when your parents age, they can keep the land and not have to, you know, sell it off, like this question we have, right, about whether you downsize and buy another home. So I'm curious, you know, if Rep. Harder's bill would kind of solve this problem that Rep. Anderson is trying to fix, because, you know, for me, it's kind of odd that we would, I guess, open up homesteading to someone who doesn't live in the area. And so I'm just curious if the author, you know, would think, you know, would there are a variety of proposals before us today, you know, if we adopted Rep. Harder's bill, would it solve the problem that he's trying to fix?
We'll find out in a little bit. That's a very good question, so let's keep that thought. Any other questions for Chair Anderson? Chair Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I didn't have a question, but now I do. I was just curious, like, for someone like me who has agricultural property, it's 5 acres, I didn't homestead that one because I live 15 miles in the city of St. Paul away from my farm, and I homestead that one. Does that mean that under this, I could homestead both properties? Because I have homes on both property, and they're both agricultural. I was just curious.
Mr. Colt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hur, to qualify for special agricultural homestead status, the property has to be at least 40 acres.
Okay. Any other questions for the author or research? Department doesn't want to step out. So okay. Okay. With that, thank you, Chair Anderson. I will renew my motion at House File. Oh, any wrapping? You'd like to wrap it up?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity, and would ask for support.
May I renew my motion that House File 2316 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Anderson. Caledonia and Waseca. Okay, let's go to Harder bill, House File 1409. Representative Harder will move House File 1409, and I have one person wish to testify. Is there anyone else in the audience wish to testify for the bill or with concerns on the bill? Okay.
Come on up.
So we have an amendment. Representative Harder moves House File 1409. Representative Harder moves the H-1409A1 amendment. Is this your amendment?
Yes, Chair Davids, it is my amendment.
Okay, so let's put this on so the bill is in the order of the author would like, then we can discuss it as amended. Representative Harder moves H-1409A1. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. So now we have the bill as amended. Two-year bill, Representative Harder, welcome to your committee.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chair Davids and members, for hearing and considering this bill. And yes, it is on the ag special homestead. As you know, family farms are changing, and in my opinion and others, we need to change with the time. So years ago, family farms had children of 8, 10, 12, rather large families. And as the aging parents would move off the farm, or it would continue to go on to their children. So as time has moved on, families have become smaller, and not every one of the children wish to continue in farming for a variety of reasons. And so the bill today would extend that to allow the farms to stay within the family and to continue. And I just want to give a couple of examples as to how this might apply as my neighbors, myself and my neighbors and others, we are falling into this category that the children do not wish to continue on the legacy of farming. Either they grew up farming and know that it's a 24/7 type of job, and once they go to college or get a job off the farm, they realize that it's somewhat of an easier life, if you want to call that, and do not wish to come back. In my own situation, I have a son, and of course we talk about farming, and his response to me was, why would I want to go into a job with such tight margins, many challenges, and insecurity? When I have a job, I don't work nights, I don't work weekends, I have a guaranteed paycheck, I have benefits, I have a 401k. It seems to me I'm living the good life, which is up for debate because I think I'm living the good life. And there are just many challenges that are happening with farmers that we just need to address with the changes in time. And so I do have a testifier here with me who we should listen to. Thank you.
I always listen to him. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Hunter Peterson with Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. Just here to express our support for House File 1409. You know, as Representative Harder said, farming and ranching has a long history as a family enterprise. And, you know, we recognize that those family farms and ranches take a lot of different shapes, and they often involve extended family, step family, you name it. And, you know, egg homestead, special egg homestead plays a really important role in preserving and transitioning those family farms. And so pleased to see legislation coming forward that aligns this aspect of the law with the real world circumstances that farmers and ranchers face. So thank you, Representative Harder, for bringing the bill forward. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing it. And I would ask for the committee's support.
Any questions from members to Mr. Peterson? Okay, so we have, let's see here, no one else from the audience which testify for or with concerns. Okay, let's go to the department on this one. No testimony this time. Okay, so questions to the author. And I think we have Representative Lee. You want to repeat your question on this bill to what you were thinking?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. I think maybe Rep. Harder probably heard it earlier. So we've seen two proposals about, I guess, adjusting the homestead ag credit. And so do you think that your bill would probably solve the issue that I think Rep. Anderson was trying to solve of his bill earlier?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Davids and Representative Lee. It might, because within the bill, I mean, you have to be within four townships, so it's not everybody would apply for either one. There's a certain parameters within the bill that you must qualify in order to get that. To expand it beyond the county, I don't know what the ramifications of that would be. But from my perspective is that I want to keep the family farms intact and going, and that's why I've gone with the relatives. I don't know if that answers your question.
I think we're doing two different things here. We're trying to get to the same point. So, but yours is more relatives. Chair Anderson's is more geography. Is that right? Okay, Chair Lee.
That's correct.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, and I don't mean to like put you on the spot. I wasn't trying to ask you this question, but I think it's just important to think about why why we'd want to preserve family farming, right? And so I mean we've seen articles for the past decade about the loss of family farms, right? And the rise of corporate farms. And so, for me, if we're trying to solve this problem of farmers aging and needing to move to, areas that have better public health systems, like Rep. Anderson talked about, perhaps the solution is Rep. Harder's bill to see if there are family members that this could be passed on to, right? It's I think, a public good that we're willing to use public funds for. So I just want to make that point, and thank you for your proposal.
Thank you, Representative Lee. We'll go to Chair Gomez, Chair, and then the author can wrap her up. Or do you have something on that? I'm sorry, Representative Gomez.
Right, I do, because you mentioned about the larger farms. Well, what happens is when families no longer have the next of kin or a family member within what I would call immediate family, the aunts, the uncles, the cousins, well, then what happens to the farmer? What choice do they have? And so some of your larger farms, they have the capacity to perhaps purchase those smaller farms that are there, which would cause, other farms to grow bigger. The intent of my bill is to keep, which is the backbone of Minnesota, small farms together and to keep growing. That's the intent behind the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Harder. Chair Gomez.
Oh, thanks. Maybe this is for nonpartisan staff, because I'm just like, it says, I'm wondering about the cousins, because it says on the revenue, huh? Oh, the cousins is the amendment. Okay. And so, are cousins included in the regular relative homestead, kind of the expansion?
Mr. Cole.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, first cousins are not eligible for regular agricultural relative homestead. So with this change, the family members that could be actively farming the land to qualify for special agricultural homestead would be slightly more expansive than that for regular agricultural relative homestead.
Chair Gomez?
I don't know if that makes sense, I guess is all I'm going to say.
Okay. Okay, would you like to wrap it up, Representative Harder?
Again, thank you, Chair Davids and members, for hearing this bill, which is important to agriculture, and I just appreciate you listening to it and hoping that we can make some movement on this. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Representative Harder renews her motion that House File 1409, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future awesome omnibus tax bill. That's the one we're going to do. So, okay, item last. I have a bill here, which I will move, House File 1680. And what this bill does, this goes, I think, to repair some things that were done previously when the state mandated the riparian buffer strips. What basically happened, and maybe staff could correct me if I'm wrong, what basically happened here, in my mind, it was a taking from the farmers that they had to do these buffer strips, and they still had to pay property tax on them and receive no income from the land. So is that, describe that pretty good there, Mr. Polk? It's an illegal taking.
Mr.
It needs
Chair.
To be rectified immediately. Chair Gomez.
I'm just curious. Has this matter been litigated about whether or not this is an unconstitutional taking?
Chair Gomez, I am not aware of any litigation for this, but in my mind, it's an illegal taking.
Well, in that case, Judge Cope, what do you think?
No, Judge I'm just Cope? Kidding. Judge Cope? Mr. Chair, Cope, could you please describe my bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the bill would establish a property tax exemption for riparian buffers on agricultural land or rural vacant land. It would require property owners to apply for the exemption and then for the county assessor and the local soil and water conservation districts to determine the amount of the land and for the local soil and water conservation district to determine whether or not the land was in compliance with statutory standards for riparian buffers. Section 2 would require county auditors to certify to the Commissioner of Revenue the information necessary for the commissioner to determine how much property taxes the local taxing districts were losing as a result of the exemption, and then would appropriate money to the Commissioner of Revenue and then to the Department of Education to reimburse local taxing districts.
Chair Gomez, that's what I meant. I have a witness. Could you please state your name and who represent for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Chairpersons Davids and Gomez. Members of the committee, my name is Wesley Beck. I currently serve as the first vice president of Minnesota Corn Growers Association. Minnesota Corn has nearly 7,000 members and represents all Minnesota's 24,000 corn farmers through our research and education efforts. I farm with my family near St. James, Minnesota in Watonwan County. We raise corn, soybeans, and hogs. We're also proud to say that Watonwan County is 100% compliant with the buffer law. On behalf of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1680, and we appreciate Chairman Davids for bringing this issue forward. Since the passage of the buffer law in 2015, the Minnesota Corn Growers Association has advocated for buffer property tax relief. House File 1680 corrects the property tax inequity that currently exists for acres in compliance with Minnesota's buffer law. In many cases, farmers are still taxed at the higher property tax rate as if those acres are still in production. There are two reasons why we support House File 1680, and let me highlight them. First, it's basic fairness. The buffer legislation passed in 2015 not only failed to provide any compensation to farmers for the costs to implement the buffer law, but farmers in compliance are taxed each year on buffer acres at valuations that assume that those acres are still producing crops and revenue. Farmers are frustrated with this unfairness, and House File 1680 would address this and make this uniform across the state. while implementing buffers along Minnesota's public waters may bring environmental benefits, it is still at a cost to farmers, not only to implement and maintain, but also the lost revenue on those acres that were taken out of production. Secondly, farmers are compliant with the buffer law. Bowser has reported a 99.8% statewide compliance with the buffer law. This is good news. Farmers have done their part, and it's time for the state to do its part by closing the gap on property taxes on buffer acres. On our farm, we have approximately 4 acres of buffers in 3 different locations. We have buffers along public ditches, private ditches, and along public waters. We have seeded them and maintained them annually. To put that into perspective, my blended tax rate on my tillable acres is approximately $50 per acre. On these 4 acres, with a $50 tax rate and 4 acres, that's about a $200 savings that I would have. So this is not a huge situation that's going to change everything, but it does recognize the work that's been done to keep the water clean in Minnesota that's been put forward by farmers. On behalf of Minnesota Corn Growers Association, we appreciate your consideration and thank Chair Davids for bringing this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much. Anyone else in the audience like to testify for the bill or with concerns? Does the department wish to weigh in here? Not on this one? Okay. Okay, member questions of the author, Chair, or Representative Harder.
I don't, thank you, Chair Davids. I don't know if I have a question. I just have a comment, I think, on the what we call Dayton's buffer law, which was implemented. It's just an example of a one-size-fits-all. If I could have anything, I would love to have this statute repealed. I'm just saying. So my family, we have land that butts up to the river, which we were compelled by this law to change it into a buffer. And I just have to say that there was a buffer already there. We had to do it more footage. And generally around our property, and most farmers are probably the same, is that land that drains into a ditch, the buffer that goes around it doesn't slope towards the river, it generally slopes away. And the reason why that buffers, I mean, they are important. The reason why that is because it prevents erosion. You don't want washouts. That's very extensive. And we use our buffers to go up and down the property to check our crops. So the piece of property that we had to, you know, put more into the buffers, which was by the river, generally, we did not make much money on that particular piece of property. And the reason why is because it's such prime property for the raccoons and the deer and all the wildlife that generally by the time we came to harvest it, there really wasn't a whole lot left. So then what happened is that, again, compelled by the state, so we took that property and we converted into one of the things that was allowed within statute, and that was grass and seeds for flowers. And of course, we were told that by someone, you know, that this will help the birds or whatever else. But I just have to say that on that piece of property, I've noticed no difference that there seems to be more birds in that particular area. But then again, every property is different. Some places that it has helped, some places that it hasn't helped. And so when this law passed, I was a county commissioner. This is a side note. As a county commissioner, and we had to pass resolutions on this, and I think within that resolution, we had to put in there, you know, a penalty that farmers were going to get if they didn't comply with this law. Well, as you know, I was probably a little upset about it to begin with. And in the county that I live in, 80% of the tax base at the county level is agriculture. And as a county, we were already working on buffers along all of our rivers. So we were already actively working to comply with ditch law that was already in statute. And so I just do appreciate the attempt here to help farmers out. And I just want people to understand that this is what happened. I'm just one example of many of what happened to our land that we were told that had to go into a buffer. Like I said, we already had a buffer, but now there's more, and there's flowers and grass. That's what it is. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Russell Harder. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I just had a quick question on line 2.16. When you're, it looks like you're repaying the local school district and the cities for what they lose on the property taxes, and then also doing a credit to property tax refund to the farmers. But you mentioned gross property tax in 2.16, and I just don't know how that interacts, because you're also, that's under the section where you're paying back the school district, how that interacts with the school to egg credit, where farmers, if there's a bond, you're only paying 20% on anything that's not your house, an acre, and a garage. So I'm just curious how they interlay with each other. If you're looking at gross instead of net, would you end up getting a reimbursement for the whole 100% of the property tax when you're actually, for that bond, only paying 20?
Mr. Cope, what am I doing? go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Yuking, gross property tax is the amount of tax before applying any of the credits. So this exemption would be, there would be no credits offered to an exempt property because there's no property tax liability. So the it would be the reduction in the taxes that would be due, assuming no credits applied.
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I was just trying to follow my train of thought, and thank you for understanding my question.
Oh, very, very good question. Well, that's kind of a big question, yeah. Okay, let's go to Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill. I have a slightly different view on this. I do think our water quality, we've been talking about it a lot today, is a public safety, public health perspective, and the law that was passed around buffers, riparian buffers, I think is a public safety issue, and recognizing that certain land has contributed in the past to water quality diminishing, nitrates in the water, all sorts of things. And so the question is, I guess, should businesses be exempt from property tax when in the course of their business they have to do certain things for public safety? And I think we've decided as a society that they shouldn't be exempt because in doing their business, they need to make sure the public is safe. Large venues have to have bathrooms, but those aren't exempt from property taxes. Restaurants, if you go there, they have all kinds of hand washing stations. Those aren't creating any income, but they're not property tax exempt. Apartments have to have egresses and stairwells that make for safe exits, but those aren't exempt from property taxes for those who own those areas. So I can understand why people would want these exemptions for them, but I think it's both not how we deal with businesses who are using land to generate income of any kind. And also, as we always say with property tax exemptions, when we are exempting other people, we are not giving benefits to other people. And I realize we are taking from other funds to give to those counties, so it's not within that county, but that's still taking from the state as a whole. So while I understand the intent behind this bill, I don't think it is a good tax policy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that. And again, what the bill does is it reimburses the landowners, the farmers, for some property taxes that they've been paying and receiving no benefit from or no income from. We're not repealing the program. In fact, it's amazing. I was very much against this back in the day, but I have to admit it's worked quite well and it's been very compliant. And I won't say I was wrong, but I would never say that on the record. So the programs worked, but the point that a lot of farmers have had issues with is taking their land for buffers, having to pay the property tax. Now, if they took the land for buffer, it was still a taking, but I'm going down into the weeds here. But Again, you might want to look at the letter of support that has the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union right there together next to each other. And many others support this. So any other questions for the author? Okay, I really hope this one can make the final cut. Chair Gomez. Okay, with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 1680 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And with that, members, I thank you so much for your work. I think we accomplished a lot today. And Chair Gomez, for tomorrow, any comments you'd like to make for the agenda tomorrow?
We'll just be hearing some child tax credits and property tax refund bills, I believe.
Very good. Make sure you come. It's going to be a page turner. With that, good government all the time. We're adjourned.